Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world, on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes and this is The Unexplained. Well, the heatwave continues in the UK, temperatures in the high 20s, early 30s on some days here, and we're having a little bit of a lull in it, temperatures down a little on recent days, but as I record this, the newspapers are telling me, some of them anyway, that we're going to get 40 degrees at times during August. Now, in a built-up area like London, 40 degrees is not fun. Back in 2003, I can remember getting to 43 degrees at Heathrow Airport here, which is not too far away from me. And it was so hot, I remember taking a deck chair to sit in the local park at 9 o'clock at night, because my apartment was so hot, it was just impossible to be in it or sleep in it or do anything in it or think in it. So let's hope we're not headed back in that direction. As much as I like warm weather, you can have too much of a good thing. Thank you very much for your recent emails. I'm going to do some shout-outs very, very soon here. A lot of emails from new people discovering the show, and I'm very, very grateful. Please keep spreading the word about what we're doing here, but we'll get on to that. On this edition of the show, thanks to Sue, my listener, who sent me the tapes of a couple of shows that had disappeared and been lost from my radio days with this show, we're going to hear the hybrid story. Remember, we talked about it a couple of editions ago. This is the story of Rachel, the claimed alien-human hybrid, and the book written about her by the people involved, that's Jean Bilodeau and Helen Littrell, called Rachel's Eyes. Well, I had them both on my radio show back in 2005, and the tape disappeared. So, a recording from AM radio this is, but it has a nice warm quality to it. You're going to hear them in just a second. Plus, I've had some emails about Mike Dickin, the great British talk broadcaster. You'll hear him at the end of the first segment about Rachel's Eyes, and you'll hear him on the handover, where just before 11 p.m. I used to hand over to him at his home studio in Cornwall, and he would take us through the night on the radio station. So you'll hear Mike as he was in life. And the thing about Mike, even on an average night, he was still damn good. You know, Mike's average was most of our best. So you'll hear a little bit of him. And then after Mike and Helen and Jean, you will hear Dr. Louis Toury, one of George Noury's favourite guests I know, and I used to have him on my shows. This man, an astrologer, a Frenchman who went to live in the US, made his fortune there, and used to make many predictions on the show. Sometimes they came spectacularly right and true, and sometimes they didn't. You make your mind up. A classic appearance from Dr. Louis Toury, the second item on this show. So it's an archive edition, an encore presentation, as they call it in the US. I hope you enjoy it. Let me know. Shout-outs now. Hello, Monica in Sydney. Thank you very much for listening, suggesting Bix Weir. Good to hear from you, Monica. I'll get on that. Anders in Sweden would like a show about executioners. Bit macabre. I think the last executioner in the UK died some time ago. I think his name was Albert Pierpoint. But we'll see what we can do about that. Waylon in Hen Goed, South Wales. Good to hear from South Wales. Waylon, thank you. Peter, suggesting Igor Witowski. Nice suggestion, Pete. Matt Jarvis sent me a sound file of Mike Dickin, and thank you for that. Gratefully received. Ross in Miami. Ross Main in Miami. And that title kind of plays tricks with your eyes. Ross Main in Miami. Originally from the UK, recovering from a shattered knee. Now, Ross, you've just got to take it easy. I broke my shoulder a few years ago, and it was very painful. And the recovery process takes as long as it takes, so please take care. Dave in London wants to hear Mr. Monroe in Scotland back on this show. It's all quiet on that front just now, but we'll try. Josh in Circleville, Ohio, thank you for getting in touch. One of a group of people who listen to this show. Thank you very much. And he also wants to thank Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool, my webmaster, for his hard work. Adam will be very glad to hear that. Enrico, nice to hear from you again. Scott in New Brunswick, Canada, enjoyed Stanton Friedman, who is a fellow New Brunswickian, if that's the phrase. I'm not sure that it is. James S. McKinney in the US, thank you for your email. Richard Kearsley mentioned something that happened allegedly in the UK some years ago. And a television newscast. Now, when Art Bell talks about this, he said it was on the BBC. It wasn't on the BBC. It was ITN News on what was the main commercial channel in those days. And one of the transmitters, and I know which transmitter it was because I've broadcast off that transmitter on radio, carried an alleged message from an alien. And there are sound files of this. and I think it's a highly dubious case, and I think I know why it happened. If it wasn't real alien intervention, then what happened was many of these old transmitters used to broadcast the feed from another transmitter, literally receive it off air, and then pump it out again stronger on another frequency. It's called relaying, a relay station. I think what happened is that somebody got the frequency that was being received by this transmitter, put an audio message on that frequency, which was then relayed at high power on the big television transmitter that carried the signal. That, I think, is what happened, and I'm not entirely sure whether that was not one of the biggest hoaxes ever in the world of broadcasting. I'm not really sure that that was for real at all, but a lot of people believe it. Not sure that I do. But thank you, Richard, for telling me about it. Julian Duggleby, thank you for your email. Got it. Jeff in Devon says Mike Dickin had claimed to have some evidence about Princess Diana and her death. And then, of course, he died. I don't think there's a conspiracy theory there, but I know that there are some people who would claim that and have over the years. Jill in Northern California, nice to hear from you. Some good points about certain US talk broadcasters who just want to make their point and put across their agenda, which is what we don't do here, but I know what you're talking about. Noel Cortez enjoyed Dr. Stephen Greer. Noel, good to hear from you. Fellow voiceover guy, Bentley in America. Many thanks, Bentley. If you can give me any voiceover tips, I'd be grateful to have them. Damon near Chicago, Illinois, about flights MH370 and flight MH17. Terrible tragedies, and have we heard the full story yet? I doubt it. Tara, nice to hear from you, and Andy in Sarnia, Ontario, Canada. Thank you very much. Just some of the emails that I've had in recently. If you want to get in touch with me, go to www.theunexplained.tv and you can send me an email or make a donation on the website. Okay, archive edition this time, thanks to Sue, sound files from 2005 and my national radio show. First up, we'll hear from Helen Littrell and Jean Bilodeau about the book Rachel's Eyes, to do with a human-alien hybrid. Now, when I started to do this interview with them, I was very, very skeptical. I just thought it was complete and utter rubbish. But as I, and you can hear it too in the recording when you listen, as I move on with it, you can hear me being drawn into their story, which is incredibly compelling. But as ever, you are the jury. You tell me what you think as you hear this from 2005.
Get this. Helen Littrell and Jean Bilodeau have written a book called Rachel's Eyes. Now, to accept this story, you have to accept the U.S. has been colluding with and working with aliens for years. If you allow yourself just for a moment to suspend your disbelief and believe that, then we can go forward with this. Let's bring on Helen Littrell and Jean Bilodeau now. Helen and Jean, good evening to you.
Good evening. Good evening, Howard.
Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start by talking to Helen first, because I think we need to set down the groundwork here first, Helen. This story is about an alien-human hybrid, isn't it? Or am I wrong?
No, that's true.
All right. Now, what is an alien-human hybrid?
It's an entity who is a combination of a varying degree of alien combined with human DNA. And it's a project that has been going on for years and years and years. It's called the Humanization Project, and it's close to that area that you were talking about, Area 51, but somewhat north and east of that.
Who is doing this?
The U.S. government and the Air Force in the situation that I'm talking about.
And why are they doing it, Helen? Why would they want to do that?
I believe that it's because they would like to see how well they can integrate hybrids into human society, and it's taken them quite a few tries to get them the hybrids with the right degree of appearance and emotions, and it's an ongoing thing.
Now, you know, and I was bound to say this to you, so let's get it right out the way now. There will be people listening to this saying, come on, you know, we're listening to this in England, we think, is this woman nuts? How do we know this is happening? How do we know?
Well, I only can tell you that I do have some details, and Jean has more that we can tell you, and it is an ongoing thing, and it's been discussed by several people who have had face-to-face contact with these hybrids.
All right, Jean Bilodeau, tell us briefly then, just to lay the groundwork, set the scene and all that, what is the story of Rachel? Who's Rachel?
All right. First, I'd like to say that my reaction was, come on, when I first heard this story. Come on.
Well, you know, it would be, wouldn't it? Any rational person who heard a story like this, bearing in mind we're all brought up to accept what we know and what we can see, anybody would say, this is just, you know, somebody who's had a few too many drinks or is just in the process of some kind of mental breakdown.
That crossed my mind. But yet, she seems so sincere.
All right, now...
And then we started on the project of trying to prove this story.
All right.
And the story essentially is that Helen's daughter was blind, and she wanted to go to college and needed a place that was quiet, not a dorm room where there's a lot of noise. She rented an apartment off campus, and she had a bad home life, so she was forced to go and rent an apartment. She couldn't quite make the payments, and this colonel and his adopted daughter, Rachel, show up and want to rent the other part of the apartment. They agree. And shortly thereafter, even though Marissa was blind, she began to notice some unusual traits about this girl. She didn't seem to have a past. For instance, this took place in the 70s when Simon and Garfunkel were very popular musicians. And so Marissa's favorite song was Bridge Over Troubled Waters. And she asked Rachel, well, what's your favorite singing group? And Rachel said, I don't have one.
All right.
What's your favorite? Excuse me?
Let's get Helen back in on this one, because Helen, this is, you know, this is a staggering story about your daughter. So here is somebody who doesn't, you know, doesn't add up. What she knows, what she is, you know, there's something wrong. Or if it isn't wrong, it's just not quite in order, yeah?
That's right. That's right. And Rachel seemed to have no fund of knowledge, not only about singing groups or boyfriends, but just no fund of knowledge. She was just unable to visit about things that ordinary teenagers would. And then there was the thing about the food that she could eat. She could only eat certain food that was actually delivered outside the apartment door, and it came in little white boxes, like frozen food used to come in, like peas and carrots and vegetables like that. And it was sort of a mushy green substance. And she warned my daughter not to eat it because it would make her sick. Not that my daughter wanted to, but Rachel told her to leave it alone. And she could only drink this liquid that came in great big glass jugs. She couldn't drink Cokes or eat pizza or anything that normal teenagers would indulge in.
And are we not sure that she just didn't have some kind of medical condition and it had to be that way for her?
Well, that would have been a possibility, and we did think of that, too, but that was not the case, as it turned out. And then she didn't seem to know about getting outfits together, because that was where my daughter did need some help, was choosing a skirt and blouse or pants that would coordinate, and Rachel had no sense of coordination like that. And she dressed a little strangely, too. She always wore a long-sleeve jumpsuit and wore a scarf tied around her head and large black sunglasses, indoors or out, which is unusual, too.
Okay, well, I would think that these two girls are together. They're both at college. It's your daughter now. Your daughter is blind and would possibly have needed a friend, somebody to help her. So I would guess they became quite close, or did they?
They really did. They became very close. And, my daughter was different, too, because she couldn't have as active a social life as she would like, because she had to spend so much time on her studies. She had a tutor to come in and help her, but it just took so long to do it. And she was blind, pretty much. Her eyesight did fluctuate somewhat, but for all intents and purposes, she was blind. And Rachel was very different. And so they did become fast friends. And it was an unusual pair, but that was how it was.
Now, it's one thing, and in this first segment, we just got a couple of minutes before we take this story further, but I want to just take it to a natural break point here. I want to ask you, it's one thing for this person to think differently and to perhaps not know about Simon and Garfunkel, to eat funny food, to drink strange things, and to wear sunglasses and a jumpsuit. It's another thing to start having suspicions that this person may not actually, may appear to be, you know, not entirely of this planet, but actually might really be not of this planet. How did you make that leap? How did Marissa, your daughter, make that leap?
Well, actually, it was me who made the leap, but Marissa had pretty well nailed it before that. But I had gone to visit my daughter one night, and as I was just getting ready to leave, we heard someone coming up the stairs, and turned out to be Rachel. And as she got something from the apartment and then turned to leave and passed in front of me, she tripped on something and was going to fall, and she made no effort to catch herself, which was kind of different. And so I reached out to catch her, and as I did, I grabbed her arm, and the sleeve of her jumpsuit slid up, and the skin on her arm was all spongy feeling and very cool. It felt like the surface of mushrooms, actually. And as I hung onto her arm and straightened her up, her glasses slid down on her nose, her sunglasses, and I found myself looking directly into her eyes, which were huge and wrapped around the side of her face onto her temples. It came to a point there. And they were avocado green with a vertical slit, a black vertical slit.
Well, this is the classic alien eyes. I mean, if you go into any novelty store, you'll see a blow-up alien, you know, for about a pound in UK money, a dollar in the US, that has eyes like that.
It was similar, but hers were slightly different than the ones that you're talking about and that I've seen, too. But these were different, and this was before I had actually seen any alien eyes.
So how did that encounter and that experience, you know, there's no denying the things that you saw, and I'm taking you on face value here. I'm assuming you're telling me the truth.
I am.
You know, how did that develop from there? How did you take it forward? Did she say, well, actually, there's something I have to tell you, I'm very different, and here's why? Or was it an ongoing story from there?
It was an ongoing story from there, and her father actually was the one that disclosed the information. I don't know if Gene wants to jump in here.
Helen's daughter is at college with a girl who doesn't add up, doesn't make sense. The girl eats funny food, drinks funny liquid, wears a jumpsuit, has strange flesh. When she fell down the stairs, her arm, her sleeve on her costume came up. Strange flesh. Funny big eyes. Something's really different, strange about this girl. But nevertheless, she's Helen's daughter's friend at college, okay? Following the story so far, there's something odd about her. Let's get Jean Bilodeau to take up the story from there. Jean.
All right. Well, Helen looks into her eyes and consciously remembers noting that Rachel looked very frightened. And I think she was frightened because Helen recognized, although this was before the famous alien scary-looking, big-eyed grays or anything.
Well, this is the 70s, isn't it, when we weren't quite so into it as perhaps we are now.
Right, the early 70s. But she's frightened. And from that point on, Helen started having gaps. She remembered consciously this entire story, but once in a while she'd have a little gap in logic. And this is where I first noticed that she had a little gap in logic because she couldn't process this information. She said, Rachel was afraid of me. And then she jumps into this, she was an alien type of thing. And we met with her father. Well, this is not a 1, 2, 3 logical step. And so we decided to explore this by getting a hypnotherapist, a very
renowned and well-respected hypnotherapist came in, and we did some regressions on her, and Helen was able to fill in some of the gaps in the story.
Because you can't go to Rachel's father, who was a military man, and say, you know, we have suspicions that your daughter may be an alien. You just can't do that, can you?
Well, no, not at the time.
You know, not logically, not sensibly. So
no,
you have to do it another way.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So we did put Helen under hypnosis, and very carefully, we prepared these questions for 6 weeks to not lead her into anything. And Helen is stubborn, too. And so if we tried to lead her, to force her to get an answer, she just would not give it. And she had her own idea of what happened. But when she looked into her eyes, Helen had a realization and was told by certain events that happened at that time that Rachel was not of this earth.
All right, Helen, well, you're the person we're talking about here. You're the one who's going through this experience. You describe it.
Okay. Shortly after this experience of looking into Rachel's eyes, she became very concerned that I had seen what she probably was, and she was afraid that I would cause her to leave the apartment because I would be frightened for my daughter's safety, which was absolutely unfounded, but she was concerned, and she and my daughter talked about it, and they set up a meeting with Rachel's father, the colonel. And so I arrived at that meeting at the time, and he started to talk to me. My daughter was present, and I and the colonel and Rachel was, but she was not sitting in that room. She was in her bedroom with the door open. So the colonel started to tell me this story, and I don't really remember how long he talked, maybe 10 minutes or 15 at the very most. And then all of a sudden, it was as though a tremendous amount of information was transferred from his mind into mine without words. And I learned how he went into the service and how he went through his training schools. And then he was assigned to this Four Corners detachment that officially did not exist, according to the government, and how what his duties were there and how he had acquired Rachel. And I know this sounds unbelievable, even as I'm telling you.
Well, acquired Rachel. How did that's a strange word to use.
Well, his job at Four Corners was to go out and retrieve crashed spacecraft and their occupants, if any were alive. Well, if they were dead, they retrieved them too, but his job primarily was to deal with the live ones. And there was this time when a particular craft crashed, and there were two occupants that were thrown clear, and they were obviously dead. And as he stood there looking at the craft, which was beginning to smolder, he thought he could see a movement inside, and so he went in to see what it was, and it turned out to be this tiny little, well, not too tiny, but a small alien person, and she was hurt slightly. Her arm was scratched, but nothing major, and so he picked her up because the craft was starting to burn faster, and they just had time to get out. He took her then to the dispensary that they had on the base and attended to her little scratch on her arm and cleaned her up. And the next thing was that he had somehow a real strong bond with her. It had happened the minute he looked at her, and it was a mutual bond.
So he rescued Rachel.
He rescued her from a crashed craft.
I'm astonished, you know, that somebody who was a military person, we know the code, the American military code. I mean, you know, it's probably not written down like this, but it's all for one and one for all. And if you know something like this, you keep quiet about it. You know, as we say here, you keep stum about it. You don't say anything.
That's right. And that was why, even during the regressions, I was just astonished that I had all this information. I couldn't believe that so much had been transferred to me. But he didn't talk. It was mental telepathy. So I don't know whether he thought he could get around the code by doing it that way. It didn't matter. I had the information. But
Helen, let's just stop you there for half a second. I mean, the obvious question here is, how come you're telling this story? What of your daughter? What became of your daughter, who was the friend of Rachel at college?
She passed away about 15 years ago. She was a diabetic, and it finally got to her. The disease did, and she died of complications of diabetes.
Okay, so the mantle is left to you now. You've got to carry the torch forward and tell the story, I suppose.
That's true. We had talked about it quite a bit before she passed away. Well, she was still in good health, and we said we should write a book someday, but that's as far as we got. And she also didn't want to bring all of this publicity to her family. And little did we know how much there was going to be. But there was more to the story before Rachel left. Should we get into that, Gene?
I'd like to do that. Let's do that now. Let's cross over to Gene now, who's your co-author. So what else happened? Because here we are at a stage where we've got suspicions. Information has been passed over, you say, from the father of Rachel, who, you know, adopted her after finding her from a crashed spacecraft. All of this is a great leap of credulity, really, to take on board. But let's just assume that it is so. What happens then?
Okay. The girls became pretty good friends after this kind of a exploration and confrontation, settled things. And one day, Marissa, Helen's daughter, comes home from college and looks around, and everything that Rachel had was gone. She walked into the bedroom and looked around. Nothing there. Nothing at all. Rachel has disappeared. And then she notices across the room a note taped to the mirror of the dresser. And she walks over and she picks it up, and then she takes it back and sits on the bed. And it says, it's a thank you note saying that Marissa had been her one true friend and her first friend, and that she appreciated her friendship so much, and not to be discriminating against her because she was different, and that Rachel had left a gift for Marissa. And Marissa sat there on the bed and just thought, there is nothing left in this house, in this apartment.
So where's the
nothing
gift?
At all. What is the gift? What is it? It took her 10 minutes to realize that she had walked in the house and looked around.
Wow. And let's wind back, because Marissa could not see.
That's right. So Rachel had given Marissa the gift of sight.
Helen, Marissa's mother, when you tell the story now, how do you feel? You obviously, 15 years has gone, you know, since your daughter passed, so it's still comparatively recent. Is it difficult for you to tell this story?
Very. Very difficult. But the story needs to be told. And with Gene's help, I'm able to do it. And I was able to write the book with Gene's help. Actually, I couldn't have done it without her, because we needed to have that investigation. And I'm not an investigator, but Gene is a very good one. And so it's just come to pass that I have to do this. I have to bring this story before the public.
And in a way, Marissa lives on through this story, I guess.
She does.
All right,
more
Gene,
ways than that.
Well, absolutely. Now, Gene, you know, it is a story that is—it's hard to take on board. You've got to use a lot of mental energy. If we were computers, we'd have to use a lot of our hard drives to store this one and to just, you know, process the information.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to Rachel? Where is Rachel?
Rachel, according to the results of our regressions, was terminated several years after
terminated.
Killed. She was pushed down a flight of stairs. The idea was that they wanted to be able to integrate the hybrids into society. They wanted, and one of the main things they didn't have was emotions and feelings. But Rachel had developed feelings and love, not only for her adopted father, but for Marissa.
So this is almost like some of those Star Trek, and not to trivialize it, but Star Trek storylines where the aliens come across into the world of the spacecraft, of the Starship Enterprise, and they start to take on human characteristics. They start to feel the things that we feel, and, you know, if you're an alien, that's not a good thing.
Evidently not.
So who did the termination? Who killed her?
Well, we believe it was the government. We believe that the colonel knew about it, but he couldn't do anything about it to stop it.
Okay, I've got lots more questions for both of you. Thank you very much for coming on and telling this story. We're talking to Helen Littrell and Gene Bilodeau about the story of Rachel and the book called Rachel's Eyes. More of this coming soon. The story is of Marissa, a student, and her best friend, Rachel, who is apparently an alien-human hybrid. Okay, she's different in so many ways, as we've explained so far. So much to this story, and, you know, Marissa is no longer sadly with us. So it comes down to her mom, Helen, who's on with us now, to carry this story forward, I guess. But Helen, what do you do with the story now? Where do you take this story? What's it there to do? What's it for?
I don't know. I'm fortunately... Gene and I have been asked to talk to the public through the kindness of people like you, and I would like to see it made into a movie.
Well, I think it would make an amazing movie. It would. It truly would. I'm surprised that somebody hasn't picked it up already. Now, here's a question for you. Do you believe, having been through what you've been through, that there are other, I say people, creatures like Rachel, perhaps among us now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And she could not have been the only one, and she was, I know she was not the first one, because there were other ones at Four Corners when she arrived who had been in an exchange program with some of our scientists from the leading medical facilities and universities. And I cannot believe that that was the end of those people, and of Rachel when she was disposed of. I can't believe that that's the only hybrids that are here on Earth. What do you think so, Jean?
It would seem that she couldn't have been the only one. But what I would like to interject is the fact that when Helen looked into Rachel's eyes, she was, at that time, we don't know what, we wouldn't have known what to call it, but almost like abducted. She was taken to where Rachel was raised and into this special room. And Helen,
this all came out through the regression that you did.
Yes, it did. And when she walked into the room, it was a room filled with with aquariums, with things swimming in them, and they weren't fish.
What were they?
They
reptiles?
Were little fetuses in various stages of development. And Rachel said, "This is where I came from." Told Helen this. And I want you to take, you know, indicated that she wanted Helen to take care of them and help them. And Helen did what most people would say, and that is, "No, I'm not going to do that. These are repulsive." So they gave Helen another job, and the job was going to be as a teacher. And Helen, you want to explain that?
Yes, they called it, they said that I could be an educator. And I took that to mean a teacher. And I said, I can't do that either because I have no credentials. And they said, we don't care. You don't need credentials. You will tell this story.
What you're doing now.
Yes, and in that way, you will be the educator.
And Helen, I don't know, it must be, of course it's a silly question to ask, but it must be painful for you to talk about this because, of course, Marissa, your daughter, is no longer with us. But in the time that Rachel and Marissa had together, you say that Rachel gave Marissa the gift of sight as a parting gift. How much of a difference do you think that Rachel made to Marissa's life in the years that she had after that?
A great deal of difference, because just the sight alone She didn't get perfect vision back, but she got enough so that she could see to get around, to take public transportation, and she still needed help with her lessons, her studies at school. But she was able to perform so many more functions than she had before. And she went on through college and attained a master's degree and became an instructor for other people that were disadvantaged.
Okay, and...
So that made a great difference in her life.
Obviously, she had friends and colleagues. What did Marissa tell them about what she'd been through? Did she tell them anything?
She did tell them quite a bit, but there were a lot of those same friends and colleagues that had met Rachel. And we did interview them. You tell about that, Gene?
So, Gene, yeah, let's do that, because that's interesting, isn't it? Because that means that there are people around right now. It's not just the two of you who are telling this story. There are other people who are part of this story and know the truth.
That's right. Or they suspect the truth. And when we interviewed them, or when I interviewed them, we didn't tell them that we were researching an alien-human hybrid or anything like that. We were just doing a story on Marissa's life.
Well, that was a good move, because that would make most people run a mile, wouldn't it?
That's right. We wanted interviews. We didn't want them just to slam the door in our faces. And every single one that we interviewed that knew Rachel said she was very otherworldly, very strange, didn't seem to know the basics that everybody should know.
But, you know, some people are like that. God, I've known people like that. I was at college with some people like that. But was she able, Rachel, to do anything that would indicate that she wasn't from this planet, or, you know, had origins that were not from this planet? Could she levitate, for example?
Well, I don't know. That never came out or anything like that. I mean, she was just trying to be a normal person. The one interesting thing I felt, well, two things. One is that, yes, we have all had strange roommates in college, but over the years, we tend to modify our opinions. And we say, well, they weren't so strange. They had to do this, or it was because of that.
Well, we try and rationalize things, don't we?
Yes, we do. But everyone said they could not rationalize it. She was strange. She was very, very different. So I did talk to a man that had taken Rachel out on a date.
Really?
Marissa and Rachel, well, Marissa arranged it. It was kind of a, you know, just to see if they could fool each other or fool the man.
She was.
And he took her out, or they double dated. And it was really kind of sad when I talked to him, because he could only remember the date to a certain point in the evening. And then he could not recall anything that happened afterwards. And it worried him a great deal.
Well, that's a sort of Men in Black story, isn't it? You know, they get erase your memory.
Well, I don't know about that.
Okay,
yeah.
So this guy had a date with Rachel, the human alien hybrid, and could only remember so much of it.
That's right. And, I mean, he's still concerned about it to this day.
Well, it is an amazing story, and I think it would definitely make a very good movie. Now, I have to say something to the pair of you now, to both Helen, Marissa's mother, and to you, Gene. You're the investigator helping Helen get through this maze and explain all of this. What are you going to say to people who will say to you, and have probably said to you already, that the pair of you are only out to create a great story that will make a fantastic movie screenplay and make you both a fortune? Helen?
Well, then I would have to say that they have never written a book or done investigations and gone through all the turmoil and stress that's involved.
All right. And
that's what I would say.
And the exposing to ridicule.
Yep.
That's the main
thing. And the laughing.
Yeah.
We could live our lives rather happily.
Okay, well, listen, I think I haven't seen the book. I want to see the book. Is it available in the UK?
It's available by going on the internet at fifthworld.com, and that's the figure 5thworld.com.
Okay, and the full title?
Rachel's Eyes, and that's spelled R-A-E-C-H-E-L-S, Eyes.
Well, I think it'll make a great movie screenplay. There's a lot more to be said about this. Helen Littrell and Jean Bilodeau, thank you for telling an amazing story here on The Unexplained at TalkSport. More amazing stories after the news at 11 o'clock. A little bit more down to earth, though, with Mike Dickin. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Howard. What a story.
Hey? Oh, what?
There was this story about this guy in America who was driving along in his car. I don't know where it was. And he saw this spaceship crash, and the two people who had been flying it were clearly dead. And he reached inside, and there was a baby. And they call that film Superman.
Well, they do indeed. Clark Kent.
Yeah, I mean,
and Kryptonite.
So similar to the story your guests were just telling, I just couldn't help but point it out.
Do I detect a note of skepticism about this, Mr. Dickin?
Just 100%.
Okay, what are you coming back down to earth with, bub? What's on your show?
Something very serious, actually. African children are being slaughtered in the name of religion in African communities in Britain. 298 children are currently missing, and the Metropolitan Police are looking for them.
Now, there was an expert, I seem to remember from the news yesterday, who said that I think there were 5 or 7 ongoing cases.
Yeah, there are quite a few going on in London, others in other parts of the world, and in Britain as well, and across Europe. This is a much, much bigger story than it appears at first, and it has only so far been leaked, and therefore details aren't quite what they might be. But that which we have, we know, because the police have confirmed it.
An amazing report to read. This was a couple of days ago. This Metropolitan Police report made the headlines that said, you may not believe it, but these things are really going on.
Can this really be happening in Britain in 2005? That's my question. When I read it, first of all, I thought, oh, yeah, I'm a bit sceptical like I was about your guess. then I read the detail and the names and the people and the places. You ain't buy a child in the Congo for 10 quid.
So the question is, if you're in the police or the social services or whatever, you know, it's a huge problem. Well, what on earth are you going to do about it?
Well, they're scared of being called racist just by investigating it. That's the problem.
I used to hand over to Mike, who would be in his studio in Cornwall. I would be in London. And those were the sorts of exchanges that took place. And the thing about Mike is, even on an average night, he was better than any of us, as you heard there. Right, let's hear Dr. Louis Toury now. This man, astrologer, went to live in America, made his fortune there, and made many predictions on my show, and has made many predictions since on shows like Coast to Coast AM in America. This is Dr. Louis Toury in classic form back in 2005. Make of it what you will. As his life went on, he found himself taken up into spacecraft. He tells terrific stories about how he looked out of the window on the spacecraft and looked back at this big blue planet, planet Earth. His name is Dr. Louis Toury, and one of the things that he got imbued with when he was in that situation was that he had the ability imparted to him to see the future and to tell us some things about our world that we may not want to hear. Let's get him on right now, I think, just to say a couple of words of introduction now. So with a bit of luck, if I hit this button here, we're going to have Dr. Louis Toury live from the United States. Louis, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Yush. How are you, my friend?
Louis, it's a great pleasure to talk to you once again. How is life with you?
Oh, my gosh, don't ask me. It's just, like, crazy. I sent a newsletter yesterday to thousands of people telling them to be ready for a bad explosion. And you heard of this Egyptian resort that was bombed, killing over, 90 people or so?
Yeah, I saw that exactly. And my first thought was, okay, well, either this guy has seen it, or he's seen what's happened in London, and he's saying, okay, well, there's been a couple of explosions here. Now there'll probably be an explosion somewhere else.
Well, as you read it, I sent you an email. Sad enough, last year when I did Moon Power, I knew that the UK was going to be a target, and this is why I wrote about it. And I gave this date again of July the 7th, exactly when it took place. You know, and there is more coming in news, and this is why I wanted to give your audience later on, with your permission, of course, some dates, so that they can be a little bit more careful, because it is not over.
You don't think so. Now, we have to say that this is your view. This is not official wisdom here. But your view is that there might be more situations that that perhaps we have to deal with. And in many ways, you know, the UK is on a heightened state of alert. And I think, you know, the people in this country, just in case, I think we're already, you know, people are. People's behavior has changed. When I came into work tonight, you could tell that people were being more observant. They were looking around. There were many police around. So, you know, you're not alone, Louis, in saying that, and in saying for the beginning of this year that, you know, bad things were coming down the track. But I think a lot of us would like to believe also, Louis, and we'll get into this as well, that, you know, not only will these bad things happen, but perhaps in the way of the world and in the divine, you know, totality of things, better things are coming along.
Well, this is part of my prediction, especially when it comes to you know, the year 2012, where all the people are thinking is the end of the world, or you know, all this apocalyptic teachings and religious poisoning. I always say to my students that what will take place during this this timing is just a raising of man's cosmic consciousness. It doesn't mean the end of the world. And I firmly believe now, as you mentioned earlier, that the British citizens are feeling like we did in the 9/11 in the United States after the shock, so to speak. So when I was cruising England doing my tour of a couple months ago, I realized and I'm being honest with you, I realized how easy it would be for the terrorists to target your country.
Well, a lot of people have had that thought, but I suppose, just playing devil's advocate here for a second, Louis, mm-hmm. you know, you and I talked, you were in a studio in Bournemouth,
right.
You kindly went in there for us the last time you were on.
Right.
And if you knew this stuff was coming down the track specifically, why didn't you say so?
It's in my books. You know, I don't want to scare people. That's the problem. You know, I don't want people to be scared. This is why but I saw it, when I wrote it and I gave the dates, if I go there and start to proclaim it, I did the same with the 9/11. For 2 weeks, it stayed on my website before, in my homepage, in full letters, be careful. And nobody, unless it happened, people won't take notice. It's just the way it is.
All right. Well, I also want to talk about some of the things that you're also, you know, claiming are going to happen and the dates that they may well happen. We'll write those dates down, Louis, and we'll run them back at you at some point in the future, in fact, closer to those dates.
Please.
The man you're hearing now is a man who was the most popular guest that we've had on this show. More emails, more text traffic, more general traffic about him than anybody else we've had on The Unexplained. His name is Dr. Louis Thury. He is French. He is in the United States. He says that he was abducted by aliens and they gave him the power of foresight. That's the boiled down version of his amazing life story. Some significant dates that you'd like to tell us, okay?
Right.
So what we're going to do now, we're going to record this.
Okay.
And we're going to, at a later date, closer to those dates, play them back to you. But before we do that, before you give us those specific dates, I think it's just a good idea that our listeners hear this that you said some while ago on this show.
I want you to be ready for an earthquake. I don't want to scare people, but I just want you to watch the news. The 28th and the 29th, you could be sure during these days that you're going to hear something that has to do a dramatic experience. I see thousands of people being forced to move and relocate because maybe an earthquake or something.
Now, this was February, and indeed, very shortly after you made that prediction, you know, there was, in fact, not one, but two earthquakes. There was earthquake activity. So,
right, and you have to remember also, use that the earthquake happens every day. There is an earthquake every day, but the one that I predict are usually above 6 or 7.0.
Louis, what about the Tokyo one? Is there somewhere that I can check and see if you predicted the Tokyo one today?
Oh, absolutely. Do you mean the Kobe earthquake?
No, there was an earthquake in Tokyo. It was not a major one.
Yes. What I want to do is I want you and all the audience to have my book for free. And you just open to the page of July 23 or 22nd, and you will see in full detail that I say be ready for explosion, be ready for earthquake. And luckily for us, the NASA did not send the shuttle because it would have exploded. And you know, as a matter of fact, I'm expecting another one as soon as within the next 2 days, a sudden release of energy that could produce again an earthquake or a bad explosion, which we already had one. So the best thing to do is simply to find a way to download my book. It's free. And your audience and yourself, you could check it on a daily basis.
All right. Well, how do we do that? Before we take some dates from you, how do we do that?
Well, they can go to my website and they can click on the banner, or I sent David the link, and that could be on your website.
All right, we'll do that too, but what's your website?
It's drturi.com, drturi.com.
All right, and we'll also put a link across probably in about 24 hours from now on our own website, the unexplained section of the TalkSport.net website, that'll get you to that. And that, you say, is the site where you can download all these predictions that you've made and
right.
See them for yourself.
You can download the full book, but if you want to know about the earthquake that took place today and the explosion that I predict, then go to daily forecast. It's on the left side. There is a little button that says daily forecast. And you could see that everything that happened last two or three days was fully predicted a year and a half ago. I did the same with the 9/11. I did the same with the attack in London.
Louis, what is it that tells you this then? If you said, you've just told me now that you said that the 7th of July would be a significant date, and indeed those of us who had to cover what happened on that day as news stories, we know that it was indeed a significant date that nobody here in this country is ever going to forget. But what told you that that would be important?
Okay, oh my gosh, that's going to be difficult. You know, I have this ability to enter the archetypal problem of consciousness since my visitation, put it this way, and downloading with the structure of the universe.
Hold on, how does that work?
That works, put it simply to you, in August 11, 1991, I went inside a spaceship, as you remember my story, and I was downloaded information on how the universal mind interacts with the human psyche and how the universe affects every single living thing, including the earth faults that produces earthquake and the weather on this dense physical world.
So let's decode that just a little bit. Is what you're saying there, and I know we talked about this before, but for people who are just discovering Dr. Louis Turi now, is what you're saying that the universal mind is something that a lot of people talk. David Icke talks about the universal mind. The fact
right.
is that we are all connected together, even though we don't know we are,
right.
we're all linked. And the aliens, you say, taught you to tap into that. And in
That's
fact,
correct.
As a group of people, we may not consciously know what's going to happen, but as a collection of people all together, unconsciously, subconsciously, on another plane, we do know. Because
That's
we
right.
make it happen, is that right?
That's correct. Mind you that David is a good friend of mine. He was very skeptical when he first met me a few years ago. And now I'm working with him very closely. He's pretty advanced. He's getting his own cosmic consciousness. But like everyone listening to your show, at least not everyone, but a good majority, they have the right to be skeptical because they don't have cosmic consciousness. They don't understand how the subtle forces interact with the world of fear, producing people like Osama bin Laden, or making people so unique, so different because of their relationship with the divine. And
so what is it you're saying produced Osama bin Laden?
He was born with the head of the dragon in the sign of Scorpio, which is the sign of death that controls terrorism. He was born under the constellation of Pisces, which is the sign that rules all religion, not just Muslim, but also Christianity. This is why this sign was chosen subconsciously by the Christians, the fishes. And it has a very negative energy in his chart. So, in fact, his chart is on my website. If you want to know everything about Osama bin Laden, I call him the Antichrist. Simply click on the plane hitting the tower, and further down, you will see his chart.
Now, here's the question for you. Did you know that that was the case about Osama bin Laden, who was around as a character but not known as a, you know, an instigator of international terrorism, but his family is quite famous and he was known. Did you know this about him before he became significant and before he, you know, got himself into the news?
It's like you being on the radio. It's like Art Bell, George Nori. They all have a connection with Gemini, with Mercury, the messengers of the gods. There is people who are pilots, doctors, teachers, terrorists, criminals, healers. And it all depends on the inheritances, on the result of many of their past life and the and how the universal mind affect their psyche, so their life, their reaction, their gift.
How does your analysis of astrology there, because you've just given us, you know, a little look at Osama bin Laden's birth chart, how does your analysis of astrology tie into you being able to name dates where you say things will happen? Explain
Osama
that to me.
Put it this way, Osama bin Laden is a Pisces, and so I am. So is Einstein, Michelangelo, and George Washington. Now, you have the positive fish who swims upstream towards his birthplace, which is the structure of the universal mind, and cast aside any religious poisoning. Now, you have the fish who goes in, and that's the one who goes for the codification of thought, for religion, for destruction. This is the positive and the negative aspect of a planet called Neptune, Poseidon, the lord of deception, the lord of religion that has been in charge of this world last 2,000 years. This is why it's very important for any of your listeners to go to my website and to click on SOS to the world so they understand this planet and how it affects the psyche of people like such as Osama bin Laden or myself.
All right. Now, I think we need to start recording right now because what I want to do is to get those significant dates that you say are going to be important. And then, Louis, you know how we make this work. We're going to come back to you and see what exactly transpired. So you tell me some dates.
And I'm not being cocky, but you're gonna experience, you're gonna see the value of my work again. I like to put my signature on my work because I know what I'm talking about, and this is what I was born to do, to raise cosmic consciousness to the population, to the masses, and I will do that in my own way, and it's because of people like you and George Norrie and Albert that I can do that. So thank you.
Okay, well, the people you just named, the people who do a show like this in the United States of America and who inspired me to do this show. But just tell me, I don't know... You've talked a lot about earth changes and earthquakes and stuff like that.
Correct.
What do you think will happen? Because we had a situation in Tokyo today that when I first woke up looked as if it was going to be really serious and actually turned out, thank the Lord, not to be as bad as people first of all thought.
Well, again, you see, if you go to my website and you go to the daily forecast, I say that France and Italy will make the news, and certain countries tend to respond to the power of the planet. And France and Italy, including Japan or Tokyo precisely, are under the energy. This is why they make the news. But anyway, do you want me to give you those dates?
Yep, we're going to get them down, okay?
The first one is the window of August 19th to the 21st, 2005. Okay. Now, there will be a probability for another terrorist attack. Okay. It'll be in the U.S. or the U.K. Hopefully, I'm wrong, and it will simply be a quake, a volcano, or maybe an airplane that crash.
All right. So you're saying there's a blip here. We don't want to terrify or alarm people, and I'm sure you wouldn't want to do that, Louis Turi.
No,
this is your view, and you think that something is going to happen.
I don't think. That's a problem.
All right. So what Louis Turi is not saying is that there is going to be, like, another strike on London, because that is just alarming people, and that's not what we want to do here. But
no,
you think that there's a spike somewhere that means a significant event. Now, there are going to be people who would say to you that, you know, every single day of the year, significant event happens.
It's not every single day of the year that you have a 7.5 earthquake or you have an attack in London or 9/11. Please. It is not every day. What I'm referring, always make the news.
All right. Well, we're writing this down here. We're also recording this because we want to do this for you, Louis. We want to, you know, something happens on that period. It's a specific period, the 19th, 20th, 21st of August. During that window, if something big somewhere happens,
it will happen.
And then we'll get you back on here, okay?
Another couple of days. Of course, I have August 29th to September the 2nd. This is a large window again, where thousands of people again will be forced to relocate due to a natural disaster. So now I'm being more precise because I don't want to scare people. I don't want to talk about any terrorist attacks, especially in the states of the UK at the present time. So August 29th through September the 2nd.
All right. I want to get a call on to you now. 08704-2020 is the number you need for this show. Les at Failsworth in Manchester has called. Les, good to have you on. What do you want to say to Louis?
Hi, Howard. How are you, Dr. Turi?
Yes, hi.
What it is, last time you was on, you mentioned a prediction, something to do with Russia, maybe last month, was it, or May, or around about the 26th.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak on that, please? What was the... Because I never heard anything in the news about Russia at that time. So do you ever get these things wrong?
Yes, I do get things wrong. I'm not Jesus or God, you know. Maybe I am, but I'm on the way. But explain, anything about Russia will be in my set of prediction. I only said that there will be some bad news from Russia involving nuclear exchange from terrorism, and it's already taking place. But I don't want to scare people. Because you don't hear it on the radio, because it doesn't make specific news, it doesn't mean it's not going to happen.
But Louis, let's do a rapid reality check here, and you know that I have to say this, and this occurs to me, so let me put it to you. You know, you're talking about nuclear material in Russia. Well, experts have been saying for a very long time the old Soviet Union had a lot of nuclear material. Some of it is not accounted for and has to be somewhere. So you don't have to be a psychic, a mystic, a predictor of events to know that that might happen one day.
That's correct, but you also have to remember that in my prediction years ago, I said that Russia will die, and everybody was wondering, what are you talking about? Russia would die. Well, that was the USSR, and my prediction came true. And you have to remember that I did this prediction years and years ago in 1991 on Albert's show, and now it's coming to fruition, and people were not there to see the really beginning of those predictions.
All right, so Dr. Louis Turi is on with us. He's going to be on with us for another 10 minutes or so here at The Unexplained. If you want to talk to him, we're going to talk to him some more about his predictions and how he gets to them, coming soon here on The Unexplained. Something to do with the forces of nature that we've seen displayed in Tokyo today, the 29th of August to the 1st of September. What else?
Well, the last date I want to give you is for November and December, around the 20th. Okay, I want to put it this way. Again, I'm not predicting that's going to be a terrorist attack, but I'm telling you, these are specific dates where there will be very, very important news on your television. I put it this way. Okay? I can't predict the future. I don't predict the future. You and I know that life is a constant process of change, and everything happens all the time. History repeats itself. The weather repeats itself. I know when. I don't know. I don't want to be too precise, but I know when, and that is what I put my name to it.
And what is it that tells you? What is it specifically that tells you that November the 20th is going to be important? Is it a voice? Do you see a picture? What is it?
No, November and December. What I know is that during those days, a very negative planet, put it this way, to make it easy for everybody to understand, will be directly transcending to this dense physical world and will produce a lot of action with the police. Now you're forcing me to be precise. I see a lot of action with the police, okay? And that will be, again, November and December. The 20th, that's the center of the window. So it could
okay,
be the 19th,
and we have to say, this is the view of Dr. Louis Turi. This is not our view. This is what he's telling us, and we will check back with him. Louis, do you see anything good about the world, or is
absolutely
it all doom and gloom that you look into? Is that
well,
what you're
the reason why I emphasize negativity is because people tend to react to negativity more than positivity. But my line of work is positive. I help people to get rid of phobias. I guide people on their career, their finances, their health. I'm a healer. I do much more positive work than negative work. But sad enough, it's the only way for me to put my point across. But there will be in the long run. You know, what's going to happen, I tell you what, is that now the British are going to be as tough and as committed like we are in the United States. Because when I was traveling your country, I was cruising through one airport to the other, and I couldn't believe how easy and how it was not like the United States. Here, it's a nightmare to go to an airport. It's
well, I think you can play that one. I mean, we don't want to get into that, but I think you can play that both ways, Louis, because I crossed over right after 9/11, 3 months after 9/11, and I crossed the Mexican border into California.
Oh, absolutely.
And the guards, the border guards there, the people who do bag checks and what have you, didn't even look at me.
But it, I mean, I'm referring to airport use.
Okay.
Airports.
All right, but that's a separate subject.
That's a fact. I give you that. We have more, much more, there are thousands of miles of coastline that is not protected, and I agree with you. But right now, the good news is that your Secret Service is going to be much more aware. The British people will be much more aware, like we are pretty much the United States, and then we're going to stop this nightmare, because ultimately, in the fight between evil and light, light has always won. So I can guarantee you that Osama bin Laden will not succeed. He doesn't know that.
This is much more, or what do you think? What does your celestial view of the world say? This is much more than a fight between good and evil, isn't it? This
is
a clash of ideologies.
It has always been the positive, the negative, up and down, black and white, male, female, God, devil. Right now you have a fight in the oven between the planet of the future, which is Uranus that rules electronics, America, the future, high tech, the World Wide Web, the technology, and the fighting place takes place with another planet, which is called Neptune, the past, drugs, alcohol, chemical, religion, dogmatic teaching. And that's why America is fighting the Middle East. The war is taking place in the ovens and transcends on this damn physical world. And I can tell you one more time, Osama bin Laden will not succeed.
Now, we had somebody who is a very well-known remote viewer, somebody who sees targets, people, or situations using his mind, using the power of his mind. And this is a technique that was used by both the Russians and the American military services, and they say that this thing works. This guy says to me, you may know, Major Ed Dames, he said on this show, he said that it was his belief that Osama bin Laden was a very sick man and may well die very soon.
Well, I can tell you that Osama bin Laden will probably die. I will do a search for you, and I will give you the date next time you invite me on your show. I will tell you when the probability for this sick man to go down to be captivated or to die will be possible. Because I can do both, you know that. I cannot just... But the date that I give you will be on his side. in November and December. This year, 2005, those are the dates that are supporting his chart. Not against him. They are before him, if you want me to elaborate
all right.
A little bit more.
Final question for you, Louis Turi. Is the way of the world as you see it, and as the aliens helped you to see it, if we are to believe this is the case, is the way of the world ultimately good? In other words, is the outcome of all things good, but you have to go through some bad stuff to get there? Is that the way of the cosmos?
You said it. Now, mankind is a very, very young process of creation, and through bad experience, through ego, through acts of terror, we recognize the forces of evil and the forces of good. But again, you know, could we live without both forces? It's practically impossible. I think mankind is slowly but surely raising his consciousness. We are raising in technology. We're not going backwards, and this is part of the age of Pisces, its last signature, the dying age of Pisces against the age of the future, or the age of Aquarius taking place.
Well, there's a lot of people in this country tonight who would like to believe that, Louis. What is your website again, just so we can get that off for people who want to go to it?
DrTuri.com, DrTuri.com. Get the book, it's free. Sign up for the newsletter. There's so many, it's such a huge site. And read the daily forecast and see what happened in Tokyo today. It was predicted a year ago in my book, Moon Power.
All right, Louis, and as we've said before, now I've recorded what you've said, I've written it down, and by the looks of it, around about August the 19th to the 21st, we're going to be having you back on this show, one way or the other,
Absolutely. To
see if anything happened, and if it didn't, then we'll have to explore why that might have been. If you're happy to do that, we're going to work on that basis, yeah?
You know, sad enough, it is. I'm not cocky. I know it will happen. That's the sad reality, to know a little bit better than
all right,
people.
Louis Turi, let's leave it there. We'll get you back and we'll see where we are then.
And that's it. An archive edition, an encore presentation, as they say in America, of The Unexplained, back from my radio days. Don't forget, those recordings were from AM radio, so they don't quite have the treble content of an FM radio recording or a digital sound file, but I still think they have a warmth to them. So thank you very much, Sue, for that. We may hear some more archive editions as well soon here, because of Sue sending them to me. Thank you very much indeed. Always grateful to hear from you. If you want to get in touch, go to the website, www.theunexplained.tv. And there you can send me an email or make a donation to the show. Thank you very much to Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool for keeping the wheels turning. Thank you, Adam. And above all, thank you to you for your help and support over the years here with The Unexplained. My name is Howard Hughes. I'm in London. More great shows coming. Until we meet again, stay calm, stay safe, and stay in touch. Take care. Bye-bye.